Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare. Gopi Channa Palabha Gitavarir Hare. Gopi Channa Palabha Gitavarir Hare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chariya. Yamuna Tiravana Chariya. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Varaja Gatara Sustera Sat Sri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nanda Koda Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Bhaktivedanta Gaur Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. Glories to Sri Guru and Sri Ganga. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Vidaya Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Sarasvati Am Gaur Vrindamacharan. Shinivari Bhaskata Adishi Tarani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, Verse 11. Is it? Okay, good. You always hope you study for the right one. Okay. Tat praticha dvijagre mam shradhayo paritamaya sarvatmana rupa. Sarvatmana nirupam te griha medishu karmashu tat pratichya dvijagre mam shradhayo paritamaya sarvatmana nirupam te griha medishu karmasu tat pratichya dvijagramam shradhayo paritamaya sarvatmana nirupam te griha medishu karmasu.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Tut. Therefore, Pratichcha, please accept. Dvija agra. O best of the Brahmins, Imam, her, Shraddhaya, with faith, Upahritam, offered as a presentation, Maya, by me, Sarva Atmana, in every way, Anurupam, suitable, Te, for you, Griha Medishu, in the household, Karmasu, duties. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, please accept her, O Chief of the Brahmins, for I offer her with faith, and she is in every respect fit to be your wife and take charge of your household duties. Purport. The words Griha Medishu Karmasu means in household duties. Another word is also used here, Sarvatmananu Rupam. The purport is that the wife should not only be equal to her husband in age, character, and qualities, but must be helpful to him in his household duties. The household duty of a man is not to satisfy his sense gratification, but to remain with the wife and children and at the same time attain advancement in spiritual life. One who does not do so is not a householder, but a grihamedi. Two words are used in Sanskrit literature. One is grihasta, the other is grihamedi. The difference between grihamedi and grihasta is that grihasta is also an ashram, or spiritual order. But if one simply satisfies his senses as a householder, then he is grihamedi. For a grihamedi, to accept a wife means to satisfy the senses. But for a grihasta, a qualified wife is an assistant in every respect for advancement in spiritual advancement activities. It is the duty of the wife to take charge of the household affairs and not to compete with the husband. A wife is meant to help, but she cannot help her husband unless he is completely equal to her in age, character, and qualities. Om Gyanati Brandasya Ganasana Salakaya Chakshurumitamina Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Svatanti Swam Padantikam Vanchikopa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyebhyascha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So we continue the story of Swayambhu Vamanu bringing his daughter Devahuti to Kardamuni for his wife. Now it's interesting that the previous verse, verse 10, describes Kardamuni's qualifications, how he's such a topmost Brahmin and, you know, he's so qualified. In fact, Swayambhu Vamanu has been glorifying him for several verses now. Now this verse is a little bit different because, another thing that was interesting about the verse yesterday is that Devahuti apparently desired to have Kardama Muni as her husband because she'd heard of his wonderful qualities from Narada Muni. So just by hearing, she became attracted to him. Therefore, Swayambhu Vamanu, the most powerful emperor of the universe, took his wife and his daughter and went to Kardama Muni to make that arrangement. Now here in this current verse, Swayambhu Vamanu is describing Devahuti's suitability and qualifications. So he's saying, yes, he's glorifying Kardama Muni, but also I have a very qualified daughter for you to take as a wife. It's interesting because the purport begins talking about the qualities of a woman, but it ends here talking about the qualities of a man. The last sentence here, Prabhupada says, a wife is meant to help, but she cannot help her husband unless he is completely equal to her in age, character, in qualities. So this talks somewhat of the mutuality or the reciprocation that is needed in Krishna consciousness, particularly between husband and wife. It's not that one is highly advanced or highly qualified and the other isn't. No, they both should be. Or at least they should be equal. That's another way of putting it. In other words, they need to be on an equal level. It's also interesting that Prabhupada puts a very strong emphasis on the purpose of grihastha ashram in his purport, and I'm going to talk about that this morning. In the Varnashram Dharma system, there are four social orders of Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, but there are also what's called four spiritual orders. The spiritual orders are, of course, sannyas, grihastha, vanaprastha, grihastha, and brahmachari. Now, they are called spiritual orders for a reason, and that is because one can make spiritual advancement by following properly within that particular order, the rules and regulations of those orders. So what has been said is that just as in the three renounced orders of life, the grihastha ashram is the only one that gives any license for relationship with the opposite sex. Brahmacharis, vanaprasas, and sannyasis do not. So that is there. There is that platform for some, you could say, material enjoyment, but really it's meant for spiritual advancement. And that is the purpose of household life. Just as any other ashram, the purpose is to make spiritual advancement in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. And of course, Devahuti's assistance in household affairs that's been talked about here was spiritual assistance. And Prabhupada makes this very clear in the purport. We're not talking about that she kept the house clean necessarily. Of course, she probably did. You know, well, of course, they were so renounced. I don't even know if they had a house, did they? But they underwent such austerities. But not only does the woman take care of the house in an instant like this, but she also provides spiritual assistance. In other words, working with the husband jointly to preach, to spread Krishna consciousness, to do deity worship, etc. And we see examples of this in the scriptures. And the Brahmins particularly, the ladies, the wives, often assisted them, right, in the particular ceremonies and sacrifices. We saw that in the Krishna story, the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto story of the wives of the Brahmins blessed by Krishna, that they were meant to assist their husbands there. We also saw it in Maharaj Yudhishthir at the end of the Rajasuya sacrifice. One of the final steps of that sacrifice, I think it was in the water, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but some final ceremony he does with Draupadi, his wife. And it was necessary often that the wife be involved in part of these. So the wife was actually not just an asset to someone to take care of the man, but was a great asset in their spiritual progress and in their spiritual practice, particularly in sacrifice, deity worship, and things like that. So, and of course, Devahuti was uniquely spiritually qualified. I think of this lady. She has the emperor of the universe as a father. She marries very highly qualified, advanced Brahmin, Vaishnav. She gives birth to an incarnation of the personality of Godhead, right? Kapila Dev. And not only that, she is the one that Kapila Dev instructed in the very somewhat difficult process of Sankhya Yoga, very deep philosophy. So, obviously, this is a more than qualified wife. This is an incredible, extraordinary Vaishnavi, right? So, anyway, of course, the other thing is that we know from many of our readings from things Srila Prabhupada has told us, from our acharyas, that a Vaishnav is beyond Varnashram designations, not subject really to social class boundaries. And this becomes clear in many different places. Of course, we can remember famously Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj at this great convocation of spiritualists, Brahmins, you know, devotees, etc. And they wanted to discuss the topic of Brahman and Vaishnav. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, of course, first of all, extols the qualities of the Brahmins. They're all very happy. And then he launches in and he explains how the true Brahmin must be a Vaishnav, and how being a Vaishnav is superior to being a Brahmin, and it's not come from hereditary birthright, but is by quality. It is by one's devotional service, one's quality, one's characteristics, that one is a true Brahmin. And of course, the smarter Brahmins weren't too happy. But he had tremendous success, and hundreds of people rushed up and I think wanted to become his disciples, like after that. And we see this many places. Ramananda Roy's instructions to Lord Chaitanya. which are very instructive in so many ways. Of course, they're one of the five main discussions between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I always find it interesting that one of Prabhupada's very first books, about 1970, was Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, very early on. And what that book really consisted of were those five conversations between, what was it, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Sarvabhauma, Bhisharya, Ramananda Roy, and Prakashananda Saraswati, I think those five. So, you know, really, really great philosophy. And of course, the highest philosophy was expounded by Ramananda Roy. Now, when Lord Chaitanya went, and why did he go? Because Sarvabhauma, who was considered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the leader of the Vaishnavas, well, he was the leader of the Brahmins, then he became the leader of the Vaishnavas when he sort of was converted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He told him, there are many things that I don't know. You need to go to Ramananda Roy, because he is the most advanced. I think in his previous appearance, and wasn't he a Vishaka? Anybody remember? Sometimes they say, I think Vishaka. Or Arjuna, he's sometimes called. Sometimes Arjuna, sometimes Vishakha. Anyway, greatly advanced devotee. And Ramananda Roy at first did not really want to instruct Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? Well, first of all, of course, because Lord Chaitanya is God, so who am I to instruct God? But more than that, because Lord Chaitanya was a sannyas Brahmin. What was Ramananda Roy? What was his caste? Shudra. He was a Shudra householder. I mean, he was a very, very important governor, you know, but he's still somehow or another. I don't know how the caste system works, but somehow or another, he was considered a Shudra, you know, by birth, even though he had a very high position. But when Ramananda Roy expressed this, what was Lord Chaitanya's famous response? Remember the verse? When Lord Chaitanya was telling him how it didn't matter that he was not qualified, go ahead. Ye Krishna Tattva Veti Se Guru Hai. Very good. Yes, whether one is a Brahmin, a sannyas, or a Shudra, regardless of what he is, he can become spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. Majjalila 8:128. And so, on that basis, he invited Ramananda Roy to speak the deepest philosophy of love between Radha and Krishna to him. And along the way, of course, they covered many different areas. And at one point, Ramananda Roy says that, what is the highest thing? He said, following Varnashram duties. Nah, Lord Chaitanya says. He rejected that. He said, that is superficial. That is external. So go on. And he kept rejecting things up until the point of pure devotional service. So the point is that for a devotee, we appreciate and we respect Krishna's Varnashram Dharma program, because it is his creation. He has developed this for the betterment of human society, so that human society can be organized in a very nice way, so people are peaceful. So people have some prosperity, are taken care of, and make gradual spiritual advancement, or rapid. But the opportunity is given through the Varnashram system for spiritual advancement. But as many of our acharyas state, Jiva Goswami and Bhaktisiddhartha says that Varnashram is of value until one becomes a surrendered devotee to Krishna. Then he said the Varnashram principles aren't really so important, you know, to one who was truly a devotee of Krishna. because we see that there are so many different great devotees of all kinds of, from different castes, from, you know, different classes, different education levels. We had, you know, we had the banana seller, right? Great disciple, Lord Chaitanya. That's probably not a very high-class job in India, I wouldn't think, is it? Being a banana leaf seller? Probably not, right? But it didn't matter to Lord Chaitanya. In fact, he drank out of his water pot, you know, which is obviously against Brahminical smart standards, I'm sure. So in this way, we know that the Vaishnav's real purpose is pure devotional service to Krishna. Prabhupada says in the purport to that verse, Kiva Vipra, In the system of Varnashram Dharma, there are various duties for the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Actually, the Brahmin is supposed to be the spiritual master of all the other Varnas or classes. But as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned, everyone is capable of becoming a spiritual master because knowledge in Krishna consciousness is on the platform of the spirit soul. To spread Krishna consciousness, one need only be cognizant of the science of the spirit soul. It does not matter whether one is a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Sannyas, Grihast, or whatever, maybe even a woman. Excuse me. If one simply understands the science, he can become a spiritual master. Sorry for the editorial. A Grihastha Vaishnav is capable of all spiritual activities. There is no restriction on what a Vaishnav can do. And as I said, there's so many verses, like, you know, even a Brahmin who's not a devotee of Krishna is no better than a dog eater, but a dog eater who's a devotee of Krishna is the best Brahmin. You know, so this is our philosophy. Grihasthas have always been very involved in our movement in ISKCON and preaching work. And in many, many aspects, every aspect of Krishna consciousness, we see brahmacharis, we see grihasthas, we see sannyasis, all carrying out very, very similar work in many ways. Although those in the renounced order are uniquely situated because they have more or less full time to be able to do that. But nevertheless, the similar activities are done by every spiritual order. And most famously, of course, remember that Srila Prabhupada in the beginning sent couples out many places to start temples. And very famously, the three couples who went to London, we all remembered those six. And we're very, very successful, and Prabhupada was very happy about that. And Prabhupada said that his preaching strategy, there's a couple letters I was just looking at this morning. One thing he said, one of his secret weapons, he says, was women. You know, because in America and the Western countries, women were trusted, right? I mean, it's true. You know, there's a big difference if a woman comes and knocks on your door, if you're doing door-to-door, and a man comes and knocks on the door, right? So the woman's much more likely to probably get listened to or get invited into the house. But beyond that, of course, they were equal in their preaching abilities and in their dedication to Prabhupada. Prabhupada understood the American culture. He knew what was effective, and he also talked about householders as well as women as being one of his processes. This is in a letter to Rupanuga early on. He said, "You are ideal householder, and you are teaching the world how to live with wife and children as a householder. My Guru Maharaj generally used to make a sannyasi from householders." So here's the contrast. He said, his Guru Maharaj, one of the householders, become sannyas. He says, but I have created householders for preaching work, and your example is proving my attempt successful. So again, Prabhupada knew time and place. He knew what was going to be appropriate, what was going to, you know, encourage and enliven the American and Western and European devotees, how they can be engaged, and how they would attract others. It's a very, very important thing. Prabhupada was concerned about how do we attract people throughout this culture. And he knew that if we had this very strict, like no women, just brahmacharya, something like that, we weren't going to go anywhere, you know. So Prabhupada had that intelligence, he had that foresight, he had that direction by Krishna to know how to be successful. And what do we see the results? Tremendous results. Hundreds of temples, thousands and thousands of disciples, devotees all over the world in a movement that is continuing to grow and prosper even today. You know, prospering differently in different places, but still, you know, everything is going on very nicely by Prabhupada's spiritual energy still present. So, honestly speaking, most householders are not going to be full-time preachers anymore, unless they're maybe at the end of life as vanapras or something. But, most of us need, we have families, we need to support them, people need to have jobs, so many things you have to be concerned about. Household life has so many distractions. You know, you have to talk about who's going to take out the garbage, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, a lot of this really stuff that seems very mundane sometimes, right? Oh, my God. Sorry. Did that ring externally? Was that ringing? Yeah. I thought so. Okay. I just know because it's my hearing aids. I hear it blasting in my ears. I'm still struggling, you know, with technology. I'm not sure if I'm convinced yet. I mean, the light's okay, you know, maybe the internal combustion engine. That's about as far as I go. Okay, although I love my Kindle, I have to say. Okay, I was saying most of us are not going to be full-time preachers. However, we have every opportunity to help this movement in so many ways, however we can do it. And we have, there's just countless examples of householder devotees who are taking some of their time or some of their money to help the temple or to help advance Christian consciousness, distribute books, whatever it may be. Every one of us knows so many people who do that. But not only that, everybody has an equal opportunity to make spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. So when one is in the Grihastha ashram, one has no reason not to make spiritual progress, to become happily situated in Krishna consciousness, and become closer and closer to the lotus feet of Prabhupada and Krishna. Sometimes people use house life as an excuse for not, you know, for their problems in spiritual life. There's no hindrance. There really isn't. There's no real, well, no, the only excuse we have for not making spiritual advancement is our own self, our own practice, our own mind, our own everything. You know, Krishna consciousness is so exceedingly simple. I'm beginning, the older I get and farther along in Krishna consciousness, I'm realizing there's a certain beautiful simplicity about it. And I had this example yesterday, something I'm involved in. I was getting anxious about, and I don't get anxious very often, but I could feel this sort of anxiety, you know, kind of welling up. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm not thinking of Krishna at all. You know, I'm thinking about my problem. As soon as I started chanting and thinking of Krishna, not that it solved the problem, but the anxiety went away. And then with a clear mind, I could think through the problem. So it's really just a matter of learning to hear, chant, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead and use those practices. I remember years ago in the movement, sometimes it was almost an excuse people would use. You know, you get somebody who wasn't very happy, some young person in their household life, you know, so they'd say, oh, I want to become renounced, you know, and they leave the wife or the wife's family, and now I'll eventually take sannyas. And of course, within a year, they almost always had a new wife, you know, so that's not the idea. That's just called, what do you call that? Multiple partners, you know, it's like, monkey business. Prabhupada said that the other day. Wasn't it one of the purports? I remember hearing that. Oh, maybe that's something I read. Probably talking about monkey business. Yeah, very good. Yeah, in monkey business, why not just my idea of fooling around, but it's like animal life. I mean, let's just be honest about it. Not following the principles, you know, infidelity in marriage, premarital, all of that. It's basically, it could be very polished, but it's still animal life. You know, okay. That's something that we have to understand. We have to understand both sides here. And I think that that's a very, very important point. Sometimes there's like two different misunderstandings that we all sometimes have in Christian consciousness. I mean, one is the condemnation of Grihastha ashram. We all know there's scriptural support. There's verses about the blind well, Grihananda Kupam, about working hard like an ass, you know, et cetera, for sense gratification. So we hear all this, great warnings about how household life can be very negative towards one's spiritual life. And on the other hand, we have these verses like Kiba Vipra, that there's no hindrance for anybody making spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness. So how do we reconcile? We have to see Grihastha life give us full opportunity for spiritual advancement, and understand sort of the idea of Yukta Vairagya that Rupa Goswami advocated, that we utilize everything in Krishna's service, utilize everything in Krishna consciousness. And when one uses one's resources, one's position, situation, family, whatever it may be, in Krishna consciousness, that is its perfection of that ashram. Prabhupada talks in this purport quite a bit about Grihamedi and Grihastha. It's It's a very important distinction, two very important words. And they convey the subtlety of this issue of where does family life fit into spiritual life. In Purport 6542, Srila Prabhupada says, sometimes householders are accused of being Grihamedis, for Grihamedis are satisfied with family life without spiritual advancement. Grihasthas, however, are different, because although Grihasthas live in householder life with their wives and children, they are eager for spiritual advancement. See, so it has a lot to do with the motivation, with the desire. If your desire is to please Krishna, to serve your guru, then that's Grihastha life. Here's another, this is from Science of Self-Realization, Chapter 1. The Grihamedi should be regarded as the blind man driven ahead by uncontrolled senses about to fall in a ditch. So in other words, that famous verse, Prabhupada says here, is meant to describe the Grihamedi, not the Grihastha. The opposite of the Grihamedi, however, is the Grihastha. The Grihastha ashram, or shelter of spiritual family life, is as good as the life of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order. Regardless of whether one is a householder or a renunciate, the important point is that of relevant inquiries. The Grihamedi, however, is simply interested in the animal necessities of life, monkey business. The Grihamedi's life is full of calamities, whereas the life of the Grihastha is full of happiness. Now that's interesting, because we might think, oh, the household life is, you know, full of austerity compared to the materialistic householders. Or no, but I was saying it's actually full of happiness. Comes down to the very simple distinction between what is material and what is spiritual. Things in relationship to Krishna are spiritual. Things out of relationship, where one does not see that connection with Krishna, are material. You know, and it's because everything has a connection with Krishna. But do we perceive that connection? If we don't perceive the connection and we're working just, you know, for ourselves, that's material life. If we see what I am doing is connected with Krishna, is connected with the mission of my guru, etc., that's spiritual life. You know, so. But now the other error is we think, okay, yeah, all right, we're rightly situated, we're householders. I'm not going to hear anything negative about that. The other error is we might think these warnings don't apply to us as devotees. They do apply to us. So one has to also be careful in household life. Prabhupada often say householders do not have a license for sense gratification. It's not what a marriage certificate is, a license for, oh, now I can go enjoy. No, so one must very careful balance the duties with devotional service. And the aim of household life is for spiritual advancement. So a certain austerity is required, a control of sense gratification. Now, anyone who sits up here and tells you that householders have absolutely no sense gratification and all they do is read scripture, chant, you know, and go out on Harinam Sankirtan on their spare time and give all their money to temple is probably not telling you the truth. No, of course there is that degree of sense gratification. Well, anyone, any human being with senses. In fact, Prabhupada said to Shyamasundar. Shyamasundar tells this on his memory tape. It was an interesting story because actually, it was a brahmachari, someone who wanted to take sannyas, and Shyamasundar was his temple president, and he says, are you sure? He says, do you have any desire for sense gratification? Any desire, even one tiny bit for sex desire? And the young man says, well, I don't know, maybe. He says, well, then you can't take sannyas. Let's say you're 100% pure. And Prabhupada heard that, and he got very angry. Shyamasundar tells the story on himself. He says, he got angry at him. He says, no one can say that. He says, as long as we have a material body, there are material desires. So what is the difference? What we do with them, how we respond to them, how we balance the spiritual and the material, how we control the material desires through the process of Krishna consciousness. So a certain austerity is required. And today, even just husband and wife staying together, one husband, one wife, that's almost an austerity, to be honest. I mean, I respect anybody who just stays together anymore, you know, because it's not all that common. And this is really is reflecting the culture that most of us grew up in and lived in, unless you were fortunate enough to have, unless your culture you grew up in was like a Vaishnav, you know, Hindu family in India or something. But if, and I'm looking around, most of you look like you're Western devotees, so you had a similar background than I did, where it's commonplace. Divorce has been, for several decades, at 40 to 50% rate. And when I was in the Grihastha Vision team and we were doing some research and studies, we were doing surveys and things and trying to really come to grips with the problems of the household life, Grihasthas, in our Krishna conscious movement, most of us, our experience was that devotees were about the same. They weren't a whole lot better in terms of our rates of divorce and our rates of staying together, maybe a little bit better, but not so much. So we still see this as being a problem. And today in Western society, infidelity is increasingly more and more in common. Found in about, last statistics I saw are about 20 to 40% of marriages, more so with men than women, about 2-to-1 ratio, but women are catching up. You know, they're becoming more independent, have more money, you know, so they can also, you know, catch up with the man in that department. There's an interesting purport in the description of the rainy season in autumn in it's chapter 20, Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. The prophet said, it's therefore recommended that a woman desiring to advance in Krishna consciousness peacefully live with a husband and the couple not separate under any condition. The husband and wife should control sex indulgence and concentrate their minds on Krishna consciousness so their life may be successful. After all, in the material world, a man requires a woman, and a woman requires a man. When they are combined, they should live peacefully in Krishna consciousness and should not be restless like the lightning flashing from one group of clouds to another. Now, I know I said there was Srila Prabhupada's purport to the 20th chapter, which we know he did not write purports to the 20th chapter, but this is from Light of the Bhagavad, you know, where Prabhupada many years ago had written that really nice little book with the Japanese paintings, I think it was, a giant, you know, with about that illustrated and described all these wonderful analogies that are in the 20th chapter of the 10th canto. In fact, now in this particular one, the lightning is flashing in the autumn sky as compared to, it says women, but you know, it could be obviously women or men, moving back and forth, flitting between one partner and another, you know. And obviously that was probably something that was fairly rare during ancient times. Of course, the whole marriage institution is breaking down. There's no question about it. In 1950, about 80% of households were of married couples. Today, it's less than half. Last statistics, 2025, were 47%. In other words, the average family now isn't, you know, a husband, a wife, and children. That's actually the minority now. You know, and for many reasons, economic reasons. I mean, you can go down the list, but basically, we see that household life is becoming less and less the norm for people. And as long as I'm on my soapbox, I will continue. What are the results of divorce? Is it a good thing? Bad thing? Well, that was an obvious question, wasn't it? Okay, even according to our social science researchers, it's not so good. Women usually are a great financial disadvantage after divorce. Often the men are not too bad off, and the women are very badly off. It does not help them economically. It's a source of unhappiness, disturbance. It can be very harmful to children. Children of divorced families have an increased risk of delinquency, drug use, and difficulty in adult relationships, and we could go down the line. Doesn't mean this happens to everybody, but there's more chance of it, you know. In our Krishna conscious movement, we need to do more than just espouse a philosophy, because this philosophy is so clear. Prabhupada has written this in probably hundreds of purports, the same thing about what is expected in household life, but yet we seem to have trouble following that. So we must also live by the principles, set example, because Prabhupada expected us to set a moral standard for society. What was he said at one time? He says, we should be adored as honest men. I mean, in other words, we, in every respect, we need to be exemplars. You know, when we walk out the door in a dhoti and sari or whatever, you know, we need to be exemplars in our behavior. We need to show people, you know, what is a devotee? What are the qualities of a devotee? You know, not that we make a pretense or something. We should really be those things or try to be those things, you know, but we need to be an example. And in our social structure, we also need to set example. We need to show people, yes, you can be in a family life, you can have a job, et cetera, but, you know, by adhering to the principles of Krishna consciousness, you can be very happy in this way and continue. So the positive side is that Grihastha Ashram is a position of spiritual advancement. And, of course, that spiritual advancement depends, like it does with every devotee. There's no real difference. That the spiritual advancement primarily, you know, some, of course, it comes from our service, but so much of it comes from the spiritual processes of hearing the Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name, deity worship, association with devotees, and residing in the holy place. These are the standard practices that have been given by Rupa Goswami and the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, and Prabhupada very much stuck to these. This is his program, these practices. So whether you do it in the temple or you're doing it at home with your family, it needs to be going on, and then one will make advancement and be happy in that life. So sometimes it's difficult, and I get asked this off sometimes, and I just say, you do what you can, but you have to be somewhat deliberate. Things happen when there's a deliberate plan, right? They say, you know, we should really read together more. Well, it may or may not happen, but if you have a time, you know, like my wife and I, we read together at 5:30. At least we try to, every day. So in other words, there's a time when we expect to, and you know, we read out loud and we read philosophy. Not a huge thing, you know, but these are the type of things that spiritualize the relationship, you know, that make Krishna the center, because that's really the issue. Sometimes we say that there are three people in every relationship. The man, the woman, and Krishna. Because Krishna is the center. It's not something that is just going on independently, you know, without Krishna being involved or Krishna being thought of very much or like that. And it's not like, you know, well, we have our family life, and then once in a while we go to the temple and do some spiritual things. They should not be two separate entities, right? They should be connected. And that means to some degree, or to a large degree, that there needs to be a very positive relationship between husband and wife. You know, if you just really don't like the person, you're not very likely to want to, you know, do a whole lot of things together. But conversely, sometimes when you serve together, you begin to like each other more, or you know, or you see more in common, or you're able to get along better. So it kind of works both ways, you know. But the point is that as one continues in Krishna consciousness, when we say that we might be making advancement in household life, it's not that we become necessarily more renounced, but, how to say this, we become more attached to Krishna. And Krishna becomes the center of the relationship, the center of the home, the center of our own lives, our own consciousness. When Krishna is more and more there at the forefront, then things become reconciled. Things become nice. They become happy, as Prabhupada said. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to end with one of my favorite little stories here from Chaitanya Charitamrita, the example of Kurma Brahman. This is from Majjhalila 7, 121 through 129. In one village, there was a Vedic Brahman named Kurma. He invited Lord Chaitanya to his home with great respect and devotion. The Brahmin brought Lord Chaitanya to his home, washed his lotus feet with his family members, and drank that water. with great affection and respect, that Kurma Brahman made Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat all kinds of foods. After that, the remnants were shared by all members of the family. The Brahman then began to pray. O my Lord, your lotus feet are meditated upon by Lord Brahma, and these very lotus feet have come into my home. So it sounds like he has a very, very nice home, right? Nice family, there's stream prasadam, worshiping Lord Chaitanya. But then he says, my dear Lord, there is no limit to my great fortune. It cannot be described. Today, my family, birth, and riches have all been glorified. And then he begged Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, my dear Lord, kindly show me favor and let me go with you. I can no longer tolerate the waves of misery caused by materialistic life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, don't speak like that again. Better to remain at home and chant the holy name of Krishna always. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further advised the Brahmin Kurma, if you follow this instruction, your materialistic life at home will not obstruct your spiritual advancement. Indeed, if you follow these regular principles, we will again meet here, or rather, you will never lose my company. Okay. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions, comments? Yes.
So I know earlier you were mentioning that the only obstacle is oneself. Again, there's Adiyatmi, Adibhote, Adidaivi, and it seems like sometimes one of those elements actually really disturbs body, mind, and, you know, and it has a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And now, even what you just read, okay, it kind of answers that, but, you know, you just have to just, you know, hold on, chant Hare Krishna, and this too shall pass, so to speak, you know. But in that moment, or in the timing of things, just seems like these influences, you know, is also an obstacle. I mean, I get that oneself means, okay, I don't turn to Krishna during these, you know, situations, so that's the biggest obstacle.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is, because the obstacles are going to be there. We're not going to avoid obstacles in both our material life, our bodily life, or even in our spiritual life, so to speak. It's there. It's part of being in this material world, part of the material nature. But the devotee learns to depend on Krishna. Sometimes, I always feel like everything that happens to us is a lesson from Krishna. And there are some times when I don't understand the lesson when it's happening. I pray that I will understand in the future. But the one thing I can always understand is, Krishna, you've given me another opportunity to surrender. You know, and that's there. And when we do that, usually we get good results. It may not be immediate. Sometimes it takes some time.
So when you see, or when if Krishna gives you the sensitivity, you know, to see that someone is going through, like, one of these, you know, there's obstacles, you know, it just seems like, too, if you just had one other devotee that, you know, that could resonate or say, you know, no judgment here, I understand what you're, you know, I don't understand, but I'm here with you, and you need to, you know, whatever it
and then,
is. You know, because sometimes you don't, when a devotee is going through that, they really feel isolated.
Exactly. And serving the devotees is so important. Serving devotees is one of the most important aspects of our spiritual life. So we need to help one another in different ways. And sometimes, as you said, people will be in different situations. We may not completely understand what it is, but we can do what we can to listen, to help, to be sympathetic. Wasn't it, I think it was Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj who said, be very hard on yourself, but easy on others?
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Lenient with others, yeah.
Easy on it, yeah. So in other words, you know, when we're talking about, you know, obstacles are happening, I should just surrender, that's for me. I'm not going to say that to you necessarily. I'm not going to say just surrender, you know, get over it, buck up, you know. You know, no. I mean, we're not cold, we're not callous. You know, we care about our fellow devotees, you know, and this is one thing I feel like this movement is really maturing along with the maturity of its members, and maybe because we do see our fellow God brothers, God sisters getting older and becoming sick and passing away. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, all the sort of the wonderful emotions that we've seen in recent memorial services, you know, just the amount of love the devotees exchanged. And, you know, I think that is so important. And there may have been a time when we were younger when we didn't value that as much, you know, or we tended to sometimes be a little harsher with one another. There's no need for it. There's really no point or no purpose in being harsh with other devotees. If I'm in a position of management or authority and sometimes I might have to correct somebody, that's there, you know, but how many times is that? 90% of the time, no, it's not my business that I have to go to correct that person, you know. So, again, a lot of this is, I feel like Krishna consciousness, it can be so commonsensical. Is that a word, commonsensical? Should be if it isn't. You know, yes, we want to be sympathetic. We want to be empathetic with others, with other devotees, sensitive to what they're going through, and try to help them. A person is not going to accept help unless they feel you care about them, you're not judgmental, you know, all the things that we know about good communication. You know, I mean, unless we actually, not just are showing those things, but actually, you know, it comes from within us, you know, that sense of care for the devotee, then they're likely to accept help or to listen. We might be of some good, some little bit of help to them. Okay. Thank you. That was a good question. Good discussion, yes. Prangavena Prabhu.
In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that to Arjuna that we are born with a particular psychophysical nature. We will be forced to experience, whether we like it or don't like it, doesn't matter, we will act on it helplessly.
Right.
So, Varnashram supposed to provide, for an example, the material needs at the least complicated according to that nature, psychophysical nature. But each individual cannot ascertain, needs help somebody to say, okay, this is what the nature you are born with, it seems like you better adapt this and connect with Krishna through bhakti, and then you'll get out of it forever. But yeah. This requires some kind of a system, like subordination to the authority, or, I mean, somebody who cares for me. Like this.
Well, yeah, as somebody who has some insight to be able to understand people's nature and how they should be engaged. And that's there, and at the same time, particularly maybe perhaps after some years of Krishna consciousness, to some degree, one can transcend one's nature, too. Our nature is always going to be there. Srila Prabhupada, as we all know, was an excellent manager. I don't think Gorky Shordas Babaji was an excellent manager. Maybe he was. I don't know. We don't hear that because, he has helping with his banking and things like that. So that's Prabhupada's nature. But how much more important and powerful was his spiritual presence and his spiritual realization, his spiritual understanding, you know. And in fact, I would say not only that, but those things that were part of his material qualities or nature were all assets. Krishna made those assets for him. You know, for another person who might not have had those qualities, the asset Krishna might have given them was renunciation. You know, so that they could just be a, you know, great model of a renounced devotee. Since Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada was uniquely qualified to be able to start a worldwide spiritual movement. I don't think every pure devotee, quote unquote, who's ever been on the planet could have done it, right? So there is something to say about that, engaging properly according to one's abilities, propensities, and talents, and that's important. And you gave the example, of course, quoting what, that's what Krishna was telling Arjuna. He's a Kshatriya. He'll end up fighting somewhere, somehow, anyway, because that's his nature. So fight for me. Right? Okay. Anything else?
Prabhu, most of the divorces happen because there's a lack of peace in the family. Not necessarily the partners want to kind of have a different partner like that, like, you know, because as in this verse today, wife and husband, they should be of the same nature. And because we don't have a system in place in our society where we match men and women, like, you know, properly, there is mismatch and there is, I should say, lack of that sameness, like, you know, and then there's conflict.
Yeah.
And eventually, there is a lack of peace. And people divorce because they want to just escape that toxicity.
Right. Yeah, people don't want to be in a situation of constant conflict in their life, so they tend to want to get out of that or avoid that. Well, you're right, and that's exactly what the verse in purport was saying today, how important it was to match the qualities. The Devahuti was very qualified and had similar qualities, characteristics, age, etc., as Kashyapa, as Kardama Muni. So yes, you're absolutely right, and if that isn't there to some degree, I mean, some degree we can rise above little things. It's not that everything's going to be perfect, you know, but if it isn't there to some degree, it's more likely that there might be more conflict and it might make it more difficult in the relationship. So that is important. In the same way as we were talking about, it's important to engage people in their varna, it's also important to engage people correctly in their ashram, and that means also with the right person, if it's the grihasta ashram. Yeah.
But like in our own society, in ISKCON, the marriage as an institution has not been very successful. We also have almost matching divorce rate, like, you know, I mean, whatever, like, you know, we see in, I should say, in a secular society, we also have pretty high failure of relationships, like,
yes.
You know. So what are your what's your opinion regarding that, and where are we failing in that regard?
You're saying, why are we failing in Krishna consciousness?
Yes.
In relationships? Well, part of it is what you talked about. You know, they may not be properly matched, there may be conflict. There could be just lack of Krishna consciousness. When one's not, at least my experiences of doing many, many years, decades of marriage counseling, that when devotees, when a couple, if they're not chanting the rounds, say, or if they're not, you know, it's much more difficult. It's more difficult to overcome the issues, the communication problems, the way everybody kind of rubs each other the wrong way, or the things that my partner irritates me a little bit, or like that. You know, if one is very Krishna conscious, those things become small obstacles. If I'm not very Krishna conscious or I'm not chanting, they can be blown up into huge obstacles. So that's there. And then, of course, sometimes there is, and I just want to say this, there can be egregious behavior by one of the partners. I mean, you know, sometimes that's there, where it would make it difficult to continue the relationship because the person really was a deterrent to your spiritual life, say perhaps with intoxication or infidelity. You know, in other words, if those things could also be there, not as often, but it can be too. Is that the question right here? Yeah.
Bill Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some example of how one has to see which is favorable for one's Krishna consciousness like that. He gave example, Srivas Thakur and Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya's wife offended the wife of his spiritual master, and he considered that that situation with her was unfavorable. He took sannyas. Srivas Thakur, he was very, his household situation was favorable for his Krishna consciousness, so he remained in his household affairs.
Srivas
Thakur, yes.
Right. Along with, and also did Dvaitacharya and
yeah.
others.
There's so many. Out of the 12 Mahajans, most of them are Grihasthas.
Yeah, as it turned out. In fact, I was even, once I was just sort of counting them up, or really like saying 7 of the 12 Mahajans are householders. Most of the Panchatattva, I think, except for Gadadhar, never took household life. Wasn't he brahmachari? But the others were all in household life at least once at one time. So, you know, it's, yeah. So, it comes back to that concept that there's no bar to grihasthas being exemplary devotees and preachers. Okay, thank you all so much. All glories to Prabhupada.
Yeah.